Stay listening at the end of this episode because we've got the little geek coming in to tell us what he thought about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 64 for the 12th of December 2009. And let me start off by saying that I have no idea how the show is going to go at this point because it's a little bit undisciplined here this morning.
I just love how quickly we went from like nothing happening to going. I'm still sitting here going, oh shit, we got to get professional now.
I told you we were going, man.
Why should we get professional? Why change? Why change a proven formula?
All right, I'm David McVeigh and I'm trying to maintain control of this madhouse tonight.
Lost it already. Gone.
Which is, of course, Josh, scoot over a little bit. You're out of camera shot.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
All right. In the corner.
I'm joined here
now.
Every week by my wonderful two co-hosts, Josh Philpott.
I retort that statement. Wonderful, you can go screw yourself.
And Dave Kozicki.
Also known as Drunky McDrunkerson today.
All right, Dave, just to explain, we talked in the pre-show before we started here. Dave is incredibly hungover and has been on a drinking binge for, 12 years or something like that?
4 days so far this week. I'm feeling all kinds of special right
now. And remember, kids, it's not good to binge drink, and we do carry an explicit tag, and we're not suitable for minors.
And remember, kids, it is awesome to binge drink, and what you should do is actually inject it directly
All right. Okie dokie. Now, for those who are listening to the audio podcast and are wondering what all this chaos is, we do go out live on Ustream every Saturday at 12 p.m.-ish. Today we're, half an hour late? We're doing well. All right, 12 p.m.-ish, which is Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11. I've got Australian Eastern Standard Time on the notes, you may have noticed. Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11. For the American listeners, that works out to about 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we also have somebody from Ireland in our chat room, and I believe she said it was about 1 a.m. in the morning. So just those are your times for you. If you do want to watch it live, want to watch the video, but don't want to log in live because of the time difference, it does repeat all week long at geekactually.com/live, which is also where you can watch it live. All right, now before we get started, I wanted to share some dates. Because it is coming on to Christmas, Dave, the festive season.
Festivus, okay, not all of us.
The festive
bow
season.
Bow to your pagan holiday for 10 things.
We're not sponsored by Dr. Pepper, but I'm drinking anyway.
But we are sponsored by your mother.
I really wish we were, because you guys always have a can.
Mother. This is from Mirren. I'm drinking you in right now.
Oh, dear. All right. So, for the holidays...
What was
holidays,
that about keeping control this thing?
I don't even hope to today. All right, so today we're going to talk about these dates, because for the next 3 weekends, things get a little bit chaotic and a little bit crazy.
Really?
So,
who's... Okay, sorry.
All right, out of the chat room for a minute, guys.
They put Jewish stuff in it. In the chat room.
Platforms is involved in this. I need your feedback.
Oh, well,
Platforms is our other podcast, which goes out on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11. Now, Saturday, December 11th, which is next Saturday, is our second annual Politically Incorrect Christmas special, which probably won't be that politically incorrect because we actually have something major to talk about, which will be Avatar. So next week will basically be everything James Cameron. We'll be talking about the man, his contributions to cinema, and so forth. And we will also be reviewing Avatar, which we are all seeing at the IMAX on Wednesday night.
Which I'm predicting that I will love, you will be in the middle of the road, and Josh will find some reason to hate.
Oh, no, I think I'm going to cream my jeans over this thing. So we'll see how we go.
I have to unfortunately say I'm incredibly excited about this film, which could be really bad.
Which could be really bad.
That leads me to believe.
I'm not a skeptic on everything, guys. Every now and then like a film.
Josh is not allowed to play with his iPhone.
Take that away.
Look, I'm using the chat room. Jesus Christ.
You have a computer and an iPhone.
What difference does it make? Oh, whatever.
All right, now. So Saturday, December 19th is we're here as usual live. Monday, December 21st is the first annual Platforms Christmas show, and they will be doing it live at the Standard Time. Saturday, December 26th. Now, there is no live Geek Actually that day. There will still be a podcast going out, but we're recording it separately, and it'll only be an audio show that week. So just to let you know that you don't have to come in on Saturday morning. We won't be here on that Saturday live show, but there will still be...
Still come,
yeah, why not? Yeah.
We want your support, even if we're not here. We need your support.
All right.
It'll probably be more entertaining than I will be.
However, Monday, December 28th will be your New Year's special. I believe you've got something big planned. Uh-huh. And you are going out live as usual. Uh-huh. Yes?
We'll be going out. There'll be a twist on the going out live, which will be going out drunk and live.
And what's different?
well, the containers will be on the table,
okay,
as opposed
gotcha.
To subtly
right, gotcha.
Intravenously.
Now, I have a little birdie on my shoulder has told me that Sarah is desperately trying to get up here to be on platforms that day. She thinks it would be a lot of fun. So,
well, there you go.
She's in trouble.
She's in trouble.
Oh man!
All right, and then of course on January 2nd. There is no Geek Actually, period. We're taking a week off. We've been going all year, so we're going to take a week off. So we're having a family holiday. I don't know what these boys are doing, but we're not having a Geek Actually on the 2nd. But January 4th, platforms will be out as normal. And then the following weekend after that, everything is back to normal. So there'll only be 1 week without Geek Actually, and platforms will run through. All right, now.
I've got one thing I should mention, too.
Please
that
do.
I think that on our Christmas show,
mm-hmm.
Christmas or New Year's, the New Year show,
whichever
show. Between
the
now and then, we will be seeing some footage, some actual gameplay of Red Dead Redemption, which
cool.
is the new GTA style game, except it will be fun. We're going to go and check that out.
Well,
and,
it's GTA, but with cowboys. How good is that?
Yes, and no mobile phones. And anyway, we're not going to go on too much.
You'll be getting messages
by telegraph. <That's>
Brilliant. I'll just never check the telegraph.
We were talking about it. You'll just have a little cup to your ear and a really long piece of string. We'll be doing a little a summary, and we're hoping for a few little surprises. We're not going to talk too
That'll
much about
That'll be
another
preview show. It'll be nice.
Cool.
But we're hoping that we can gear that one up so that we can kind of be a lead-in for the beginning of next year, as in, you know, we'll do a summary of the awesomeness of this year mm-hmm. and a little preview of that as well. So that should
Excellent.
Be coming up on the 28th.
Now, I think we should mention at this point that Josh and I were on the mobile iTunes store yesterday, and we actually discovered that Platforms was actually on the first page of the
yes.
Hobbies mobile iTunes, which is very good. I was very impressed by that. So I'm very proud of Platforms, guys. You guys are doing really, really well.
We were dancing and he switched over after we finished.
Well, you know
nice one. Okay, Dane. Okay, Dane just put in the thing, GTC Grand Theft Cattle.
All right, so today's show.
Thank
now,
you, Laura.
News is very, very light this week. We got a couple of stories, but we are going to be doing a Steven Soderbergh day. We're going to talk a little bit about Soderbergh. We saw his new film last night, which was The Informant, and we will talk a little bit more about that. We have no feedback to feedback on this week, so this all I can say is please send your feedback into us so we can make a better show for you. It's feedback@geekactually.com. You can send anything positive, any negative, any suggestions, anything you like, basically, and we will answer them on air for you. Okay, so news. Let's. We're not doing categories today because we only have a few news, so we're just mixing them all together. And I just thought we'll just run through these pretty quickly. The first one I want to talk about, though, is this story that broke this week in America. Now, this disgusted me to the point where I was fuming, mad. And luckily, we actually had a resolution to this morning. It's kind of late breaking. I heard it this morning. There has been resolution, but it's still a talking point.
This offended me almost as much as the movie itself.
Well, there you go. Apparently, a 22-year-old Chicago woman was at a birthday party. Her name is Samantha Tumpak. She was at a birthday party at a Chicago cinema where they were watching... New Moon as the gift, basically, and they're having the cake in the auditorium and the
whole
bit. That's
something you should re-gift, for sure.
Well, you know, there's a bunch of girls, and that's fine. And, you know, that's all beside the point. The issue is that as she's videotaping on her new camera, by the way, which she doesn't really understand how to work properly, and apparently some of the footage actually goes, oh, is that what that does? You can actually hear her talking on the thing. The tape has the disc or the memory stick or whatever it is, was this camera was running, has been analyzed. Apparently only about 4.5 minutes of footage was taken. In that 4.5 minutes of footage, some of the screen was seen, so you could actually see some of New Moon playing in the background. Apparently, she actually commented, wow, look how clear that is, right? So she was surprised.
Was it all sparkly?
The theater manager called the police. Ugh. They came and they arrested her for grounds of piracy, and she was thrown in jail for 2 days while she was waiting trial, where she could have actually faced prison for up to 3 years for piracy for shooting the screen of New Moon for about, I don't know, about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, something like that, of footage. Now, why this? And now, let's say the resolution is she was actually granted, she was released on her own recognizance this morning, and basically the charges have now been dropped. The theater has dropped the charges, which they probably did because they're embarrassed because everybody has been ragging on them for this. But what it actually raises is that era of fear and paranoia that the MPAA has created in America, that everybody is like, oh my God, somebody's doing something naughty, you know, and we should immediately arrest them for it. I'm also disgusted at the police department for actually coming and going, oh, you did it, therefore we must arrest you.
I'm surprised Homeland Security didn't get involved.
I just love the fact that at no stage during the start of this section has anybody actually bothered to stop and look at the footage.
I know.
Like, I mean, it wouldn't have taken a cop more than 2 minutes to just pick up the camera and just go, show me what you did. And just look through and go,
There was a story last year at Comic-Con where a guy was actually videotaping the people talking on the panel, and then they showed some footage from the film that they were talking about. I don't remember what the film was. And he kept the camera rolling, and one of the ushers basically came down and said, you can't film this, and took his memory card. Right? Which is the...
What?
Because they wanted to examine what he had videotaped and so forth. And that is the responsible thing to do, not arrest you. Yeah. You know what I mean? The responsible thing would be, can you please stop that?
And especially with like the no states, one's been man, asked. They would sit there. Like, I mean, if I was this chick, I would be sitting there going, I'd like you to meet Woodward and Bernstein and Leibowitz, because these will be representing me while I shaft you and sue the living fuck out of
you. This is actually something else that really bothered me about this. And this is actually, at this point, a rumor. I haven't been able to get confirmation as to whether this is true or not. But apparently... there was a reward offered to, or a reward of about $600 offered to the theater people. Basically, if this rumor is true, what it means is that the MPAA is putting bounties on people. And this is just wrong in every sense of the word, you know?
Dude, it's got nothing to do with that. I mean, the thing that you raised, the most important, I think, about this whole conversation, which is that my biggest problem with what's happened is that no one asked her to stop.
No.
No, I mean, no one's walked up
to... And apparently, according to the report that I've got here, which is from, I think, the Washington Post, apparently the usher was actually in the cinema several times. So the usher could have walked over and told her to stop.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the usher's gone straight to the manager. He's not walked up and gone, look, you're in a movie theater, put the camera away.
Hmm.
I mean, that would make sense.
It's going to be my new job. I can tell you now, I'm going to get dressed up like Boba Fett. I'm going to go around to every cinema. I'm going to collect those bounties.
All I can say is that I hope that the MPAA feels like they have absolute egg on their face. And I actually really, really, really hope she turns around and sues the shit.
I hope she does. I hope they close the theater, and I hope that the MPAA is forced to get involved to defend some sort of bullshit, and they get a bite taken out of it. Because, I mean, look, if she'd done the whole movie and whatever else, then fair enough. But for a couple of minutes of footage, or not even that, there's probably... I haven't watched it, but, I mean, there's probably, what, maybe 30 seconds of it in the corner while she's shooting other shit. Man, that's ridiculous.
That's not piracy, you know? No. I mean, and this is the thing. You look at it and go... What also bugs me is the fact that Buzz Out Loud had a report yesterday, I think it was. Somebody had said that they knew somebody who was an usher at the cinema. So it's all hearsay anyway, saying that they knew somebody who was at the cinema. And no, it's not true. She actually had videotaped like an hour and a half of the movie. Well, they've got the memory card. They've looked at it. They know what she's videotaped, you know? And according to the Washington Post, they've analyzed it. And it's only like 4.5 minutes total. So, you know, and that includes the cutting of the cake and everything else. So it's just ludicrous. The entire thing is just nonsense and makes me so angry.
To me, it's the perfect slice of Americana. No disrespect, but it's just overreactions.
Modern America, people, no, I agree
people
with you.
Going fucking apeshit, and then what we love America about, suing people. And I really, really hope that she sues the shit out of
I do too. I hope she absolutely destroys that cinema.
If she doesn't, like, seriously, I'm going to record 4 minutes of a film and I'm going to sue the shit out of her.
Do you know what, though? I would actually really like to see her sue the MPAA.
Yeah.
If she could somehow make a connection and find out if that reward was true, then she could sue the hell out of the MPAA, and boy, she could massacre them.
She should just turn herself in and get the money.
All right. Also in the news today, aside from that, let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. You remember a couple of months ago we reported that Steven Spielberg was going to remake Harvey. Well, apparently Steven Spielberg has now withdrawn from remaking Harvey. And now what I don't understand about this, Slash Film reported this, and what I don't understand about this article is not their reporting is fine. What I don't understand about this article is the fact that it says here that he left because apparently he was having creative disputes with the latest potential lead, which was Robert Downey Jr., which we had heard about several weeks ago. Steven Spielberg doesn't have creative disputes with people. Steven Spielberg is more powerful than all of them. So Steven Spielberg says, this is how I'm going to make it. Do you want to be in it? And people go, yes. You know?
I think what happened was he sat there and spoke to Robert Downey Jr. and he was just like,
this is a really stupid idea.
You Jewish? He said, no. Off.
Now, I have a feeling Spielberg finally sat down, started to actually work out this project, and kind of went, this probably isn't such a good idea, you know, and basically walked off. So at this point in the at this point in time, the Harvey remake is dead, and there was much rejoicing from the crowd.
No one really wanted it.
I don't
think
so.
No one had an interest
in this
idea. In
fact, I just bought a copy of Harvey from Amazon. It's downstairs. I might even watch it tonight.
No, you won't. You're going to put it on your big pile of stuff that you've got downstairs that you
won't
watch.
Well, yeah. It's on the to-watch pile.
Which is bigger than most people's entire DVD collection.
I know, I'm terrible. I'm terrible. Okay, this one is actually kind of aimed at Dave, but it's all of us, but really is kind of aimed at Dave, which is a DC comics. Now, we reported a few weeks ago that DC and Warner Brothers were restructuring their film production unit, and we thought that's kind of neat because maybe we'll finally get some more of these films out and so forth. Well, DC has now come out with plans to reboot the continuity of their heroes. They're restructuring, according to this article, once again from, I believe it was Slash Film again that was reporting this. It actually comes from an official report at DC's blog, and AICN also had interviews with the DC people.
Which is Ain't It Cool News, if you don't know.
But apparently the first one's off the bat to be rebooted. The new line of graphic novels will be called Earth One, and the first line of heroes will be Batman, Superman. Of course, with Geoff Johns writing Batman and J. Michael Straczynski penning the new Superman.
Which will be interesting because he's a damn fine writer as far as comics go.
Yeah, and
it'll be interesting.
What is interesting is what he says about it. He actually says, to quote Straczynski, he says, what I'm trying to do with it is dig into the character and look at him through modern eyes if we were to create the Superman story today for the first time, but keep intact all that works. What would it look like? The only substantial thing I'm leaving out is the notion of a Superboy.
Please fuck the dog off.
Says here, the first time Clark puts on the uniform, it really is his first time. In reflecting further on the question of changes, probably one of the most changed characters is Jimmy Olsen, and the most changed atmosphere is that of the Daily Planet. A good newspaper reporter keeps shooting no matter the danger, so I'm bringing that aspect into Olsen. The rest of the staff look, act, and talk like actual reporters now, and that's a lot of fun.
All I hope is that he's not a fucking pussy and he actually does something with his powers. The guy is like the most powerful person in the entire DC universe. He doesn't do shit.
I know, but Batman keeps referring to him as not knowing that
the
he's
Boy
a god.
Scout.
Well, yeah. In the Batman versus Superman books, he keeps in the thought bubbles, so Batman's thinking to himself all the time, going, "If Clark one day woke up and realized that he was a god, the world would be in a lot of trouble."
He wouldn't think that anymore because anyone who follows the current line of DC Comics would know that Batman, aka Bruce Wayne,
is dead. Yeah, well, he's dead now, but they'll bring him back. They'll sew his head back on. All right, the other thing...
Reanimate that... Zombie Batman.
The other thing... Zombie Batman, there we go.
Reanimated, Josh is in now. Reanimated Batman.
Superman. He goes around beating the shit out of Chris Brown.
The one point in this article, though...
Chris Brown? That's what you meant, right?
Quiet.
The one point in this article, though, that I thought was a little bit of a controversial thing, though, was the fact that there are DC is actually considering the decision to publish these as graphic novels rather than as a monthly series. And it would seem that the entire industry is thinking this way. They're thinking about getting rid of monthly periodicals and basically going straight into the graphic novel, put it out in chunks rather than in
I think
drips.
This is kind of reflected through what's going on in the, well, worldwide journalists in general and any sort of magazines. It's just getting smaller and smaller, and it's getting... Print is going the way of the dodo at the moment. And, I mean, it's never going to totally disappear, but it is definitely on the decline. And
but
you
wouldn't,
can see
wouldn't,
that they're doing...
If you're going digitally, though, wouldn't it make more sense to go monthly because now you've got this much easier distribution arm?
I don't know, man. I don't know
what
they're thinking.
People like bigger things, man. Like, I mean, that's what it's coming down to now. I mean, like, if you go into a comic book store now, you're outweighing your individual comics by just more structured 2-3 comic books per book. They're releasing them in books now instead. I went to buy Why the Last Man, the series, and you can no longer get it in the single paperbacks.
Yep.
It's now you have to buy a book which contains the first two tradebacks.
Yep.
And that's it. They've got rid of the other ones.
What they used to do, especially when, you know, they do like anyone who's following the Mark Miller series Kick-Ass, which hasn't even finished yet, as I found out to my great, great surprise and disgust and dismay when I downloaded the first 7 issues and then read online that the final issue isn't out for another 3 weeks.
So how are they? So how are they finishing the film?
Like they need it. Nicolas Cage is involved as fuck. Oh, by the way, my prediction is that Nicolas Cage will be used for likeness rights for the reboot of Superman, and then he can really be Cal.
I wish I had that picture still loaded up.
Now,
yeah. Speaking of Nicolas Cage, it's funny that you bring him up. Nicolas Cage is in deep financial caca at this point.
Oh my god.
That's what I
want. I'm bankrupt.
Now, I'm going to bring up a photo for you. This is for our visual watchers.
My money is gone in 60 seconds.
This is the Nicolas Cage that we're familiar with, okay?
Keep going. You're on a roll now.
I'm going to have to...
There he is, Dave.
I'm going to have to focus on villainy and start up my own Con Air.
Well, since all these money woes started, Nicolas Cage is now looking like this, Dave, so see if you can impersonate this one.
Oh, god
Jesus
damn.
Christ. Ah, I lost my hair. I can't afford my plugs, and I can't even afford to dye my beard.
Isn't he looking dreadful?
I think I turned to heroin.
I love it if for anybody that has a decent computer and a good screen resolution will notice prison service written above his head, which I think is just ironic.
All right, so what is this all about? Apparently, this actually goes back to 2001. We actually reported on a story. I think this is before you guys. I think it was when Jake was around.
There was no show before us. We reported
a story where Nicolas Cage had a castle in the Highlands of Scotland. He had bombed a castle. Was that with us?
I'm pretty sure that was with us. Okay, I remember. We've talked about it anyway.
And he had to sell his beloved castle because he was having money woes. So this goes back a while. But apparently it goes back even further. 2001, he was told by his financial advisor that he needed to curb his spending. Basically, his financial advisor said, you can't live the lifestyle that you want to live unless you are making. At that time, he actually said that he needed to make something like $31 million a year to even like maintain the lifestyle that he had at that time.
Wow.
So Nicolas Cage apparently likes to buy things, and he buys islands and houses and, you know, small children, and I don't know. You know, he buys everything around the sun, and if he could buy the planet, he probably would. Well, this is all caught up with
and
him.
And I call it Krypton.
And this is all caught up with him, and he's now basically broke. He owes the IRS millions of dollars.
Brazilian dollars, I believe.
No, we're getting to that part. We're getting to that part in a minute because he owes the IRS apparently something like $2 million, and so he then turned around and blamed his financial advisor and said, "It's all your fault. It's all your fault. there you are.
The Jew. I bet you he was blaming the Jew, wasn't it?
Levin. Yeah, his name was Levin.
Levin. Yeah,
and so he basically said that, you know, it's all, if anybody has seen Vampire's Kiss, by the way, that's the, there you are. he basically blames him, saying that he mismanaged his money and it's all his fault. Well, Levin has turned around now and has basically countersued him and said, get fucked, you little bastard. Not those words, obviously.
I totally believe it was those words.
Basically saying,
I'm going to sue you for all your worth.
What are you talking
Which
about?
Is nothing. I know you are. You know,
look, I can honestly tell you that what happened was he was leaving Las Vegas. He rolled snake eyes. and he gave himself the kiss of death with an 8mm. It could happen to you.
Oh, God. Anyway, Samuel Levin has filed a countersuit recently. He's filed a $20 million lawsuit. Nicolas Cage has filed a $20 million lawsuit against him for fraud, claiming that he led him towards his financial ruin. Levin has now basically turned around and countersued, and he says that he is owed $129,000 for the work he did after he was fired last year, and says that he has been warning Nicolas Cage since 2001
to stop acting.
To stop, well, spending is what he's been warning him to do.
Sorry.
And basically saying that it's not his fault that Nicolas Cage has basically lost all of his money. Now, just to add a little bit of insult to injury, on December 10th, what are you two mumbling about?
We were trying to be professional and stay off air.
I can still hear you.
Oh. Dave's a fucking prick.
All right, so to add insult to injury, on December 10th, the Sydney Morning Herald has now published an article that says that Nicolas Cage is now being sued by his ex-wife for, ready for it, $14 billion.
Brazilian.
Oh, sorry, Brazilian dollars. Brazilian. Actually, no, it's a little south of the Brazilian. She's being sued.
So it's a knee dollars?
He's being sued for $13 million, basically saying that she's the mother of Cage's son, Weston. Weston? Really? Weston?
Isn't that like a food brand
it's
or something?
Cookie, isn't it? Anyway.
My son Cookie and Carlo.
I love the fact that she's the mother of Cage's son Weston, who is 18 years old. So what she's trying to sue for child support, he's 18. You know, it's like, get over it.
No, she wants it back paid.
Back paid. Anyway, so she's claiming that the lawsuit that she brought, what is it? I don't even know why she's suing him. She's trying to keep to the life that Cage's lawyer says, this lawsuit is ridiculous. But but she's basically trying to keep to the lifestyle that she's become accustomed to, apparently. And she's suing him. So on top of the fact that he owes the IRS money, on top of the fact that his ex-financial advisor is suing him, aside from the fact that he has no money and he has to sell everything, and according to the latest thing, it says that he has to make $30 million a year now in films, which would explain why he is in so many bad films.
No, it doesn't. I think he should settle out of court with everybody by promising never to make another movie again.
No, I mean, don't. We will wipe all debts if Nicolas Cage stops making films.
Just stop acting.
Oh, please. God. Furball, don't go there, man. There will be no National Treasure 3 if we can help it.
No.
But I will say one thing.
He'll be looking for his money.
I think this could be a perfect time to get like one of those, go out with a blaze of glory. I just want to see Nicolas Cage
like
doing another Leaving Las Vegas style movie where he's basically, this will be his shining career moment where he returns to form because he's actually that bad.
You're so delusional. But the only problem is if he does another Leaving Las Vegas or something and wins an Oscar or does something outrageous like that, then that just gives him ammunition to stay around for a lot longer.
No, but I'm saying to the point where it's, you know, so obvious that like he's about to flake out and die that, you know, like he'd make this amazing performance because he's actually that distressed
now,
and drunk.
That's been his career for the last 10 years.
Yes,
every
I know, but
film,
this one
I've been
might
waiting
actually
waiting for him to flake out and go crazy.
Oh, dude, we need another Tom Cruise moment.
Oh yeah, we need.
That's what he needs, man. He needs to go nuts on
fall in love, jump around on a couch, and bitch slap Oprah. And
oh man, how funny would that be? It's like,
oh my god,
so
we're going crazy.
There you are, Oprah.
Hello, Oprah. Come here. Stupid bitch.
That's just what I want to see. I want to see her sit there quietly and be like, so what's happening in your life? He's just like, across the couch.
Just see Oprah's face is.
According to one of these,
this film was brought to you by Scientology.
According to one of these mini copious reports I've got here, apparently he's borrowing money from everyone too. Apparently,
He hit me up on Facebook for a line.
Johnny Depp has been loaning him money and all sorts of stuff. So it's like, wow, he is really, he's fucked himself completely. So it'd be interesting to see. Look, he is a member of the Coppola family. And if we haven't forgotten, Francis himself is a master of excess. And this is the man who self-financed Apocalypse Now to the tune of every cent that he had, and basically was facing bankruptcy. The film turned around, made money, so he went, great, I made all my money back. So then turned around and rolled every cent that he had into One from the Heart, which bombed so badly that he was paying off the debt all the way up until just after Godfather Part III, which is why he made so many films where he was just a director for hire, because he was paying off a debt. And so he comes from a family of excess.
So what you're saying is that Cage is going to get worse
before he gets better.
Jesus, oh, God.
So, yeah, I think Cage is going to be...
Everyone boycott Kick-Ass.
Oh, but, you know, dude, right now, no, Furball just shot the best shot ever. Francis had some creativity.
Well, there is that. Yes, booyah! There is that. Now, look, I've got to say, early Nicolas Cage, I actually didn't mind. Con Air, didn't mind. The Rock, didn't mind.
Dude, you're living in the past.
I know, but what I'm saying
I'm with you.
I'm saying, this. No, Furball saying he showed some creativity. So did Nicolas Cage. What happened?
Look, creativity, I think, Francis can only be counted in current decades.
I'm not talking about Fran, I'm talking about Nicolas Cage. What?
No, that's no, but what that's I'm what I'm saying. Francis still has creativity.
Have you seen his last couple of films?
No, I'm not. I have hope.
I love
how cynical you are about, like, everything else, but then you
the
have
man
little,
made Godfather. The man made Godfather.
The
man
made
Godfather Part 1, Godfather Part 2, and then the man made Godfather Part 3.
Look, yeah, it was bad, it wasn't that bad.
Man made Dracula.
What I say.
The man produced Frankenstein. Kenneth Branagh.
I believe it was a Jewish film called Frankenstein.
Oh, Kenneth Branagh. Yeah, okay.
All right. The man made Young for Young or whatever it was that he made last year.
Seriously. Point
I love,
has been
I
made.
Love
Thank you,
early. I love early Francis Ford Coppola. I think
okay,
Francis
so maybe.
Coppola was a god, but he has fallen.
All right, maybe. All right? Maybe.
And I think maybe this is a common recurring theme in the Coppola family. It would seem.
Look, the Cages can't act, Coppola can't fucking direct. Boom.
Oh, can't direct anymore.
No.
Anymore.
Can't direct.
No, dude, don't start. He won't. He
no,
won't.
He's in that mood. All right, let's go. Let's go a little bit humorous here and say some details have surfaced about Peter Berg's Battleship movie.
Yeah,
yeah. You want to hear what Peter Berg's got to say about Battleship?
It's going to be Friday night Battleship lights.
According to Berg, the aliens are known as the Regents and will be portrayed by a combination of live actors with CG. They come from a world similar to ours and aren't actually looking to take over humanity or the planet Earth. Instead, they're on a mission to build a power source in the ocean. Of course they are. They need
that makes total sense.
All right, which is why they come in contact with the Navy fleet, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and says that my favorite, this is from Slash Filmcast, by the way. I believe Devendra Hardwar wrote the article. And basically he says that he explains away the seeming illogicality of having aliens come to Earth just to fight on the ocean by grounding the alien ships once they hit the ocean. Berg mentions that the ships do fly to Earth as well as through the atmosphere, but they lose that capacity as soon as they land. That explains away the illogicalities of it, because he says they can't fly once they land. How's that explain anything?
I don't even care about that. My major like brain explosion right now is still the fact that you can explain away anything you want. The script still sucks balls.
Now
I'm looking forward to there'll be one scene where somebody's sitting in a toilet and he's, you know, having a dump, and there'll be like, you sunk my battleship.
Well, and
it's going to happen. I can promise.
Here's the irony of the whole thing. First thing is that according to this article, it goes on to say that they ran into slight problems when they went to talk to the Navy and stuff like that about, you know. So the Navy doesn't.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. We got this awesome big budget film. It's called Battleship. It's based on the game.
You sunk my battleship. Now, the two questions that rise here. First one is that why did they have to license the game? This has nothing to do with the game. Why did they just make a Navy?
Because it's still on the. You know,
but they could have called it Battleship, and I don't think they can actually trademark the name Battleship.
I think they should call it Non-Flying Aliens.
Non-flying aliens.
That would be awesome.
The other thing is, apparently, according to the experts, they're saying that the only problem is that the U.S. Navy actually doesn't use battleships anymore. They don't have any battleships. They have destroyers, but they don't have battleships.
I would like to see
a World War II term.
They should have gotten Steven Seagal and made it Under Siege 3.
Oh. There you go.
Slash battleships versus aliens. It would be perfect.
Steven Seagal versus aliens.
And all I'm waiting
Seagal.
For...
Fat Seagal.
He is a battleship. He's the battleship.
Seagal's the alien.
And this bodes extremely well for the new movies Connect 4 and the Uno film.
But you can't put Seagal on a boat anymore because we really want to see him run like a pansy.
I'm sorry. If nobody's seen it, man, Steven Seagal Lawman. Best fucking show in the history of mankind. I will stand by that right now. It is Cops meets fatter Cops meets Seagal. Everything is zen. Everything is, and he runs like that.
He runs like a girl,
which
man.
Is awesome. I wish I was kidding, but that's
he runs like that in the film Out for Justice. You actually see him run like that. It's like, you know, even when he was fit and looking like he always ran like a girl.
It was the funniest thing. Like my flatmate and I, Suze, we had a drinking game for every time he said Zen or something about as a practitioner of martial arts, and he'd just be like, so it was like clang, or here we go again, or. The best is they'll do a slow pan around the street and there'll be, of course, atypically, two young black males walking around and they'll have big t-shirts on and one of them will just do something like that, like adjust his shirt and it'll be like slow motion. It'll go, outline of him and Seagal will be like, when you're trained in martial arts like I am, you notice these things. He's doing nothing. He's noticing he moved his shirt. I noticed the adjustment.
He's looking out, and Seagal's not even looking in the right direction. He's actually staring out the window, struggling to breathe.
The best thing about the whole series was they flash back to his partner, and when he starts going on about some Zen shit, and you can see it for a split second, his partner's like got that look like the Zen shit again, Steve. This is like the 8 millionth. Fucking time I've heard it
they
while
showed,
you've
they
been a deputy.
They showed
like,
a clip
what
of,
the fuck?
They showed a clip of it on The Soup on Sunday night. And the clip they
I
showed...
I don't think you have the balls, Raggy.
And the clip they showed was Seagal in the backseat of the squad car, and they're actually in pursuit of somebody. And here's Jabba the Hutt sitting in the backseat going, turn right, turn right, turn left, turn right. And the guy in the front seat just goes, can you let me drive?
I was laughing so hard. He's like... With my Zen pack.
And he's wearing his yellow tinted shooting glasses at night, you know? And he's sitting there going, you are such a fucking wanker. You really are.
The best thing about it is you watch the opening credits and it looks exactly like Cops. And I know we're segueing like way off topic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But there's a scene where he goes, I'm Steven Seagal. And then there's a pause and he looks right in the camera. He's like, that's right, Steven Seagal. Fucking serious? I'd like to say you're the dickhead who broke up with Kelly LeBrock to sleep with your nanny.
All right,
that's what you should say.
I think we'll shelve Lawman a little bit, and because I'm going to watch the pilot episode tonight.
Oh, dude.
And when we
there's two of them up. You got to watch them both.
All right, I'll watch both of these episodes, and we'll see if we can get Josh to. And we might slip that into the James Cameron next week.
It's just
to have a little bit of, because I got to tell you, it sounds awesome.
It's so funny.
It is Walker Texas Ranger for real.
It is. Yeah. It is. If Chuck Norris came in and gave him like a roundhouse, that would be the only way that could be better. Seriously, it is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
I think it sounds great. I think it's definitely worth it. While we're on the subject of television, though, I just want to very very quickly because we've already kind of covered television. I just want to very very quickly cover a little bit about Dollhouse. This is Joss Whedon's series we've talked about before. It has actually been cancelled. But I think this is a very ironic moment happening here.
It's typical Joss Whedon. As soon as the show gets awesome, which, as I predicted months ago, as soon as I started really, really enjoying it, I know that a show is going to be cancelled.
Well, what's really interesting about this show is that not only did we predict that it would become awesome, I just watched episodes 5 and 6, which is a two-part episode.
Spoilers, please. I haven't watched them yet.
I'm not going to tell you the spoilers. I'm not going to actually go into a spoiler zone, not until Dave has actually watched them. I'm about to call you Joss. Not until Dave has actually watched them.
I'll take that.
But what's interesting is that I sat there and I kind of binged out on Dollhouse last night because I thought Dave and I were going to talk about it, but Dave has been so drunk he hasn't watched it. But
Dave has quite successfully been too drunk to watch a lot of things.
Dave has shelved any activity that does not involve alcohol for almost entirely since platforms. I have been in a drunken haze since then. I apologize.
Man, when you die, they're donating your liver to science fiction. Anyway, the point is that we've come back to this two-part episode. Dollhouse has been gone for weeks. It's been on break. Comes back, single night, two episodes, back to back, two-part episode, and it's friggin' awesome.
I mean, was there some sexiness? Eliza Dushku running around in Gosford skirt?
No, we didn't need it, actually, because it came back with such a powerhouse punch with the whole, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but you know the whole politician thing that's been building up. And this all builds to a fucking head.
I'm predicting that this is when Ray Wise comes into the play.
And I will give you a hint as well that we also have a new character introduced, played by Summer Glau. And
there we go, I'm done. Dave is leaving the show right now. I should go home and think about hot chicks who can have any memory implanted in their
Summer Glau is actually playing, you know, Topher. She's the Topher of Another Dollhouse.
Wow, that's so in a huge stretch, hot geek girl.
Who, of course, Topher thinks is gorgeous. But anyway, no spoilers at this point. All we're looking at is the fact that the irony that I wanted to talk about here is the show gets canceled on the fourth episode. They get to finish out their season. And the irony is, what happens now if these last six episodes that they have to go suddenly rate their asses off because the show has suddenly taken off?
They won't, man, unfortunately. Which, for me, I honestly think it's a great thing. I mean, as a Whedon fan, it pisses me off to no fucking end because, you know, it was the same thing that happened when I started getting into Firefly and that got axed. It was the same thing with Angel. Look, I like Buffy, but I was a much bigger fan of Angel, and I think he's really matured as a writer. A lot of people were bagging Dollhouse saying that it's too serious. Yeah, but
the difference is, though, is that Firefly was axed unceremoniously, right? It was struggling along. They kept threatening it. They didn't know what they were doing. And suddenly they just said, that's it. Boom. The plug was pulled. It came off television. They didn't even air two episodes.
Yeah.
They only showed up on DVD later, right? So that was an unceremonious axing. This one, they've axed at the beginning of the season. And said, yeah, you can play it out. So what happens if now this series suddenly becomes a hit?
It's typical Fox. They did the same thing to Futurama, and they fucked it, they cancelled it, then, surprise, huge DVD sales, they brought it back. Same thing with Family Guy, exactly the same, they brought it back. Fuck, Futurama they brought back twice. They axed all of these other shows. Dollhouse, I guarantee you, it'll slowly rate higher, higher, higher until the end. Then nothing. DVD sales will go through the fucking roof. Fox will be like, maybe we should have let it go. Joss, fingers crossed, will make Dr. Horrible 2 on internet, make his money, and go, you know what, TV? Fuck you. I'm producing my own web-based TV shows that I can do whatever the fuck I want with whoever I want at whatever budget I want and release them on DVD. And I'm hoping that that's the way he goes. And I hope that other people follow him, man.
Yeah.
Because I'm sick and tired of having... I'm sorry if I'm soapboxing, but I'm sick and tired of seeing intelligent, creative shows being fucking axed by Hollywood so that we can have another Dog the Bounty Hunter or fucking
Steven Seagal Lawman.
That is awesome. I stand by that. No, but seriously, there's so much shit... just wanky fuck TV. You know, we'll put another Tila Tequila Shot at Love series in, you know, just so that we can axe anything with a bit of creativity.
Or put Jay Leno on in primetime 5 nights a week. Just to pop shot, just to correct you, when Futurama came back, it was not really good. It came back as that series of movies. It's now been picked up again as another series, and it hasn't come back yet.
It's on
the way back now.
And you should definitely download this podcast, Pop Shot, because I'm actually going to say I agree with him. That the Futurama does not work in a movie format.
No, it was perfect enough to get it back to being a series.
Oh, look, they were funny, but not a card on the original series. Yeah. Not even close.
Look, I mean, the big question I have to ask is, as a business, where is the advantage? Like, I mean, I'm thinking now from my own level of management, from my own knowledge of business, and I'm saying, what is the advantage to cutting a series before you've seen its ability? Like, you're not
Fox doesn't show any thought to that. That's the
problem. No. But I'm saying, okay, rationally, I mean, we can rag on them all we want. Like, we can talk about how shit they are. They've been around for years. They still make money. They still get the business. So they're obviously doing things right. But where is the intelligent thought to it? Like, I just would love to know. No, I would
That's
love to know.
There,
no. I'm sorry, Dave. You can say what you want. But the truth is, Fox is still here. Okay? And which means that they are...
Okay, but to be fair, Fox is here for three reasons.
Simpsons,
American Idol.
American Idol.
Simpsons, American Idol, and House. These three shows
are their number one
shows. These three shows rate their asses off.
Yeah.
And the entire network is built In particular, it used to be Simpsons. In particular, that entire network is built by American Idol. That's the network that American Idol built. Because, let's face it, that show, when they can go and they do weekly votes for idols and they are getting 65 million votes, this thing has got so many fucking people watching it. Mm. You know,
but you see, this
and
explains
so what they look at is they go, we can make money off, and this is why Fox has so many fucking reality shows, because they go, we can make money off that reality show. Why would we spend $1.5 million or $2 million bucks an episode on a show that only gets a fourth of the ratings?
So you answered all of my questions by saying the three shows that rate it. Simpsons, shit, hasn't been funny for at least 10 seasons. House, I'm not even familiar with the show. It sounds gay. And American Idol is just shit. So, I mean, for me, it's like boycott Fox. I'm calling for our 10 viewers to boycott Fox, for once, to fault Dave in the thing.
I mean, honestly.
My biggest question, though, and sorry to interrupt you, Josh, but my biggest question is, why the fuck does Joss Whedon keep going back to them?
It is so true. It's the whole pleasure and pain thing. It's like he just likes having his. I mean, like, there's part of me that wonders whether or not he's just afraid to go anywhere else. Like, I mean, look, I mean, Dr. Horrible is an experiment and it worked well, but he didn't learn from it. So I just wonder whether maybe he just knows the path. And the other thing is, this is what gets him his fame. We can up and down on Joss all we want, but the truth of the fact is, he's so loved because his series always get axed, because he always has these unfinished symphonies. If he actually finished something...
That's beautifully put. No bullshit.
Yeah. It's like he has these unfinished symphonies. I mean, with the exception of Buffy, did Angel actually end? No, Angel never...
It was an open-ended ending, but it was one of those things where I think he had like two episodes they gave him to wrap it up.
He actually had planned seven seasons. So he wasn't ready to finish.
Exactly, but this is what I'm saying. He doesn't get to finish things. Now, we only love him because everything he shows is amazing ideas. It has to be because he keeps going to Fox, so obviously unless he comes up with some amazing shit-hot idea, they're not going to accept it in the first place.
I'm assuming they've probably given him some sort of bullshit assurances along the way. I mean, like, for me, watching Dollhouse, it's obvious the effect that Battlestar... I mean, he's a self-confessed huge Battlestar Galactica fan. And you can... besides the fact of the obvious casting of, you know, half of the ex-cast of Battlestar in Dollhouse, the tone, it's a lot darker, it's a lot more mature, it's a slow burn, it's brooding.
It actually does miss one key marker of a Joss Whedon show, though. The key marker of a Joss Whedon show, though, is humor.
And but you see, I like how dark it is.
Dollhouse is actually missing a lot. No, you can be dark and still have humor, though. And he seems to have really kind of gone to the brood and left his humor. But that may be the mood that he has of being at Fox.
Can you blame the guy? It's like he must wake up and fuck, I've gone back to Fox.
What the hell am I
They've
doing?
Axed three of my fucking
shows. Mascotti has pointed out in our chat room that he has three comic books. Yeah, he is actually a prolific comic book writer. He's been writing, and he also has continued Buffy and I think Angel and Firefly as comic book seasons.
Yep, he has.
And
soon to be Dollhouse.
I have no fault for him in that aspect, but I mean, I just wonder, like these ideas, if he does get a full show, I would be really interested to see whether the fans still hold true to it. Like, I mean, the unfinished symphony nature of it means that we all coveted it as a great series. Like, Firefly is a good series, right? And the movie was good, but I mean, he's had four or five years to plan the movie. You know, like, I mean, if this had continued on as a series, would it have maintained as decent a show?
Well,
as
what
it was?
I was hoping is if the series had maintained, we would have headed into Epitaph 1 territory, and I would think we would have.
Which was by far the best non-aired episode.
Brilliant! And if you haven't seen Epitaph 1, which was the last episode of
episode
season
13,
yeah, last episode of season 1, never aired on TV yet, but it is available on iTunes, and you can actually pull it down off of iTunes, of American iTunes. Dollhouse.
It is a
hypothetical episode basically looking at the future and where things might go.
It was great.
And it is brilliant. It's so dark and it's dystopian and it's wonderful. It's just, you know, it's fabulous.
As I said, typical Joss. As soon as it gets good, they fuck it.
That's right. So, as I say, I just find it really, really odd that he's been axed so early in a season and allowed to continue on.
I think it's because of all the writer's strikes and everything. Now, if you noticed, all seasons, they used to be 24, 25 episodes. Now they're 20 episodes or half seasons of 10,
well, actually,
11
episodes.
A standard season
is becoming 13 episodes.
And so they're not showing any faith. And what I really hate is I understand it's a business, you know. Mm. I'm not lost on that. But at the same time, you have to show these people and creative people, give them a little bit of faith.
Give them a little bit of room.
It's like, if you don't rate after three episodes, fuck you, we're cancelling.
I would love to see Joss Whedon do an HBO series.
HBO, approach him, please, now.
HBO or Showtime, either one of them. I'd love to see him.
HBO and Showtime,
with Dexter.
Just have that amazing ability to give you these, not necessarily, like, they don't do the giant Fox, you must string it out for 13 seasons.
No.
Crap. They give you, like, a couple of seasons, they let you tell a story, and then that's it. Boom, you're done. And it becomes a DVD box.
Unless, of course, you're Deadwood, where they cut you before you're finished.
I can predict that Fox in the next year, the way that their shows will go, is all they're going to do is produce pilots, and there'll be a phone number that you call at the end of the pilot, which is, would you like to see another episode? Call now, and it'll be a hook into American Idol. And then shows will be made episode by, I've got a contract for two episodes with this show. It's going to be awesome.
Look, you know what? I've just realized we've done this. We've been doing this show now for 49 minutes. We haven't even talked at all about tech. So I'm just going to throw this one thing in here and just say, I talked to Joss. Josh about this the other day.
Joss Philpott.
There you go. Talking to Josh the other day, and I was saying, did you hear that Intel is producing a new CPU? Mm-hmm. We won't harp on this. I just want to talk. I just want to talk about just for the pure.
Man, seriously, we talked about this at work, factor. And there was just like four of us sitting there drooling.
Apparently, we all know about dual core processors, and we all know about quad core processors, where we actually put more than one processor onto the same chip.
Dual core.
No, his isn't. His is an old one.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
man,
Jesus.
Shit.
Dual core.
This is a dual core.
Dual core processors, where we basically put two processors onto the same chip. So it basically.
I know what it is.
Okay, good. Now, how would you feel if Intel said, you know what, we really want to push this processor to its limits, so we're going to create a 48-core processor.
I thought you were going to say Brazilian core. I was getting excited.
A Brazilian core processor. It'll be 24 dual-core processors built onto one chip. They're basically calling it a render farm on a chip. Now, each core itself will really only be about the same sort of strength as an Atom processor, but you got 48 of the fuckers. <You know? laughs> So what they're basically saying is these machines will be super duper fast at doing things like high-end graphics and so on. Can you imagine what this is going to do for the world of gaming?
Oh, dude, you know
for Windows, they will crash so much quicker. It's going to be unbelievable. As soon as you turn it on, it will just come up with epic fail and you have to take it back.
The one thing that I couldn't stop thinking was just I just can't wait for when these become normal, you know, sort of like cores, because at the moment it's hard enough to explain when the numbers, right? Like, you go up to a computer and you go, well, you've got this one, it's a 2.6 dual core, and then you go to the next one, you're like, this is a quad core 1.8, and they're like, well, I don't want that one, it's got less numbers than that one. I'm like, it's four cores, and they're like, I don't understand.
It's like when the dual cores first came out, because we had gotten used to Pentium 4 at that point, and we were up to like 4 gigahertz processors, and then they said, here's this new dual core processor, 1.3 gigahertz. But that's really slow compared to that one. It's like, no, you don't understand.
It's dual core.
Anyway, so these processors are supposed to be starting to surface next year. It'll be interesting to see what they do with these beasts.
Honestly, I think you've said it in one, man. They'll be render farms.
They're going to be render farms, yeah. They'll be putting these into silicon graphics machines and so forth, where ILM will probably take bulk orders on these things. Because let's face it, they have their render farms are already like, 70, 80 computers all internetworked in to become render farms. Or more, each one of those computers could now carry 48 cores. One point that somebody actually raised, though, which was the more cores that they can fit onto these processors, and let's face it, you got one chip that has 48 cores, then you put dual chips into a machine, so we start talking about 96 cores, whatever it is, and we start putting in, it just goes through the roof. The point is that the more cores we have, the more we start to simulate the concepts of the human brain. Because the human brain has the ability to be, it essentially is a big multi-core.
So what you're saying is 5 years from now, Skynet.
Pretty much.
Awesome.
I think the internet's going to take over the world.
Yeah, it's very, very possible. I mean, like, we're getting to the point where we can build proper artificial intelligence.
Have you seen these Japanese robots? These girlfriend artificial intelligence?
I'm looking forward to having my own summer glow.
Imagine one of those artificial perfect people that they are with, like, you know, 700 cores in their head.
No, fuck that. I can tell you.
She will have no cores. She will have a very simple input command. And all Dave, she will Dave say would to like me the is, dual core come version. With me if you want to live.
Dave, that was all Dave wants say. The one core version.
He wants a one core processor with basic functionality.
He wants the old kitchen two
and,
work,
no, and no speech.
He wants a 286 processor in his robot.
I want a Commodore 64 level of programming in it. Just sitting there with a laptop. Walk forward. Forward, click.
Okay, and that sexy pick moment Luke. Brought to us for by Dave Kaziki. All right, let's move on. We've got some
apologies
movies.
To any women in the chat room. Or
Laura, you know we're
Laura,
kidding.
Laura, I'm sorry, girl.
All right, look, before we move into film reviews, I think we're just going to do our little promotional moment because it always gets left to the end and always gets rushed through. First thing we're going to say is we're going to promote the crap out of our other podcast, which is Platforms, which goes out every Monday at 8 p.m.
Second in Australia. Woo.
In the Games and Hobbies.
I don't care.
Absolutely.
It's still awesome.
It goes out every Monday at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11, right here at geekactually.com, but geekactually.com/platforms.
Not platforms. Like our Facebook page. Thank you, Dave.
Now,
Dave is filled
if
with
you
shame.
Are looking, if you are looking for the Platforms fan page on...
Can I tell this story?
Yeah, just wait one second. If you're looking for the Platforms fan page on Facebook, it does exist and it is growing. But Dave, how would they find that that fan page?
Dave would like to thank everybody who was part of the Platforms experience. We had a fan page started up on Monday around midday, and by Tuesday evening, we'd already got our 25 fans, which I was stoked about, so we could get our own URL. Now, I had been out drinking at a Nintendo event that night, and it was about 2 a.m. when I got in and noticed that David sent me a message after I made him an admin saying, hey, buddy, you've got enough for your own URL. You should do it. So I was like, this sounds fantastic. In my
this
drunken
sounds like
stupor,
a great idea.
I was like, yeah, I was Facebooking at 2 a.m. drunk. What could possibly go wrong? So Dave, in his infinite wisdom, decided that I should
that's
type
that
up.
Dave,
this
by the
Dave,
way.
In the third person, Dave. I started typing up, and I typed pretty well in general. And I was like, yeah, it's great. Platforms live. Awesome. And I hit it, and then it was like, do you want to check this? And I was like, no, click. And then it wasn't until 3 seconds later that I noticed it was Platforms. Live.
Awesome, Dave.
And so we're going to rag him forever for this. Yeah. But in the meantime, if you go to facebook.com/platformslive.
Platforms live.
Also, just to be aware that if you actually just go and search Platforms in Facebook, it does come up in the search engine. So you don't actually have to worry about the Platforms so much. But if you just think, whenever you want to go to the Platforms, whenever you want to go to the Platforms website, just think to yourself, pretend like I'm drunk. And you'll type it correctly.
They won't. They'll just pass out after eating McDonald's on the couch. That's all that's going to happen.
We also have a fan page for Geek Actually just in general, which is spelt correctly. Which is
it's actually J-E-E-R-K.
Greek, actually.
No. That's a separate podcast we're going to do, which will focus on the porn industry.
Thank you very much. All right. So it's facebook.com/geekactually or facebook.com/platformslive. All right. You can also follow our friends. Now, we have a couple of friends that we want to mention in particular. And I'm going to bring up...
We have friends?
We
this
do.
Is new.
I'm going to bring up a super on screen here.
Because we've never plugged these guys.
No, we plug these guys every week, and they plug us every week. So we've got kind of podcast collective happening here. This is the Movie Fan House podcast, and this is by fans for fans, and it's our good friends Charlie and Brad over at moviefanhouse.com. Now, just to let you know, moviefanhouse.com is actually not running at this point. They are redesigning still, but the podcast is available on iTunes, and you can just search for it on iTunes. They are a lot of fun to listen to. Our other friends, and these two are sidetracked over here, but the other friends that we should mention are our good friends at The Real Junkies podcast.
Who are going to get their asses kicked.
And they mentioned that on their last episode, actually, that they are going to accept the challenge.
Of course they are.
They put it out.
So, they called us out. We're going to kick your ass. Really? Really, America?
And as I said, I actually don't have Modern Warfare 2, but I am accepting the donation of a copy to our mail post office box, which you'll find on our website, if you want me to also join this.
I don't think they'll win because we're not fighting for oil.
The challenge is, of course, is that the Real Junkies podcast want to take on the Geek Actually podcast in Modern Warfare 2, and we're there with them. And we are inviting, not challenging, but inviting Movie Fanhouse to also join the fray. So those are our friends. Real Junkies podcast can be found at weekendronin.com, or you can search for it on iTunes. They are a bunch of guys who sit around and review films, and they love their movies, and they are a lot of fun to listen to. And we are hoping to one day get some of them onto our show if they could ever work out how to use Skype. So if they work out how to use Skype, we will bring them onto our show. All right. Now we've got all that out of the way, we are going to have a look at Steven Soderbergh. Now, Steven Soderbergh is a U.S. director who I find fascinating because he seems to balance his time between making esoteric art house stuff, which nobody goes to see and makes no money but costs nothing to make.
I'm sorry, on par with Coppola.
Sacha Grey, Girlfriend Experience. Nudity.
I've seen Sacha Grey's Girlfriend Experience, and I promise you,
you've
I didn't
dreamt about Sacha's no, girlfriend. Actually,
no, I've
I
seen
have,
it too.
I have pictures of Sacha Grey's Girlfriend Experience around.
Anyway, I do respect Steven Soderbergh for the fact that he wants to make these experimental little films like Bubble and The Girlfriend Experience, and even as far as going to say Shay. Parts 1 and 2 was an experimental film. He shoots a lot on the red digital camera, which is gorgeous to look at. He shoots with no money. He goes out and basically spends his own money to make these films. And the way he does that is by countering that with these big budget Hollywood entertainments. Such as Ocean's 11 or Out of Sight.
You're mentioning the good ones. Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13.
Okay. He's also made some crap as well, yes. But
I've seen Ocean's 13 3 times.
It doesn't get better with age.
Why? I can't remember. No, because I can't remember anything about
it. That's how I feel about Ocean's 12.
And no, but I mean, seriously, blanked. Completely blanked. I've watched it 3 full times. And I don't know if I've Men in Black flashy thing myself so that I don't fucking remember it to strike it from my memory. But I swear to God, 3 times... not under the influence of anything. And I cannot... all I remember is Andy Garcia's in it, Pacino and Ellen Barkin, and there's an exploding car. That's the only thing I remember about the entire movie. I don't remember a single other thing.
Very interesting.
I just thought I'd segue
weren't under the influence of anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it may be more entertaining if I wasn't smashed.
See, I actually think that Soderbergh is, and look, quite frankly, this is a personal opinion, I actually think he is a little bit of a intellectual wanker, and I think he does make films that are so highbrow sometimes that we can't even see them. What's that for saying? Too deep, can't see. such as when he made his remake of Solaris with Clooney. I mean, Solaris was so cerebral and boring that I sat there going, oh. But then again, I must remember that the original Solaris
was so cerebral
and boring. And they talk about it being in this masterpiece. And I got to say, I could never see what people saw in Solaris. They always talk about it being the Russian 2001. No, 2001, far better than Solaris.
You need to look at the criteria by which, you know, so-called real film critics judge films.
Exactly.
Which is, can we make it long, a period piece of some period, very slow with an epic scale and score, which nobody except people who are just like, nobody except the French will go and see it. This is Solaris existence.
The French. The French. All right, so I think Soderbergh is an interesting director. Now, he made this huge splash on the world when he came out with his first feature film, which was, of course, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And he also reinvented James Spader's career, because James Spader at that point had only been really in teen films where he played the sleazy guy.
And
you
Stargate.
Know? I hadn't been in Stargate yet.
Was that 92, wasn't it?
I don't think Stargate came afterwards.
94. I'm going to shut
up. Sex, Lies, and Videotape came out in the 80s, Dave.
Did I mention I'm hungover?
Anyway, the point is that he came out and he created this ethereal character out of James Spader. It was bizarre, and he was mesmerizing to watch. And you sat there going, who the hell is this? You know, and of course, Spader's career has gone in all sorts of different directions since that time. But Soderbergh made such a splash with that indie film that he's managed to go on to make things like Ocean's 11 and so forth. And I always found it really interesting when he first said, when they first announced Out of Sight, Jennifer Lopez, George Clooney, and so forth, and they said that Steven Soderbergh was directing this commercial summer film. It's kind of like, really? This isn't Soderbergh territory, because at that point he'd only done Sex, Lies, and Videotape. He'd done Kafka, you know.
I still think it's on par with. I'll admit I loved the original Ocean's 11. I thought it was his first one was a great show, film. But I still kind of have a real soft spot for Out of Sight. I think it's a really delicately made film. I think it's just so subtle, and especially the way that the relationship between Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney's characters sort of just, it sort of bubbles a little bit. And I also love, and I have to throw in this little bit of trivia, that you have Michael Keaton playing his ATF guy, who is the exact same...
FBI guy.
Oh, is it ATF?
Yeah, no, he's FBI, because he wears the T-shirt now.
And it's the same character who's in Jackie Brown.
Yeah, and I was talking to Josh about this last night. Apparently, him and Elmore Leonard have some sort of unwritten contract, because they're friends or something like that, that every time that character... Now, I mentioned his name yesterday. What was it again? It was Ray Nicolette.
Yeah.
Ray Nicolette, who is actually a recurring character in Elmore Leonard books, is in films. So whenever they adapt Elmore Leonard novels, which, of course, Out of Sight is one... what's his name again? Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton gets to play Ray Nicolette. And this is why whenever, like, Tarantino makes Jackie Brown...
Jackie Brown. Say it again. Jackie Brown.
In comes Michael Keaton to play Ray Nicolette. If Steven Soderbergh makes Out of Sight, in comes Michael Keaton to play Ray Nicolette. So whenever Ray Nicolette makes an appearance, it's usually Michael Keaton. So it's kind of one of these like running jokes, it would seem. We have a trailer for Out of Sight. So let's have a quick look at this. I could be wrong about this, and I haven't actually researched this, but I actually think this was kind of Clooney's first big film.
It was, I think, Dusk Till Dawn just came out before it, and I think it was...
Really? I thought this was pre-Dusk Till Dawn. No, this was pre-Dusk Till Dawn, I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to IMDb it right now.
Yeah, IMDb it for me, because I remember he'd been doing
I'm
ER...
I'm sick of being called out for being wrong.
I could be wrong. No,
when
be wrong.
I'm just hungover.
I could be wrong. He was doing ER, he was making a very big name for himself, and he then started to slip in and do a couple of feature films. And, of course, he eventually left ER to pursue films full-time. Now, I know that this and...
From Dusk Till Dawn was way before.
Oh, way before. Okay, good.
From Dusk Till Dawn was probably the big one. Then then he nearly destroyed his career with Batman and Robin and The Peacemaker. Then Out of Sight came out, and then Three Kings.
Three Kings was awesome.
And then The Perfect Storm.
Oh my God.
I was right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Awesome. I put Peacemaker out of my head, because the idea of Nicole Kidman playing a nuclear physicist was almost as believable as Denise Richards playing
I'm
one.
I'm so glad you said that. I was just about to bring that up. I remember watching that film going, she's got a singlet that seems to be almost see-through and short shorts. I totally believe that she's a scientist.
A scientist, a nuclear physicist.
Yep. It's like gamer chicks, you know. It's just like every single gamer chick looks
but
exactly
then again,
like
Nicole
Lara
Kidman
Croft.
A few years earlier, when she was even younger, was a neurosurgeon in Days of Thunder. I bought that too, really. Yeah, I did. All right, so here's
don't know what you're talking about. I totally bought it. I was like 13 at the time, so I would have bought anything.
She kept all of her knowledge in that frizz that she called her hair at that time. All right, so here is a little bit of Out of Sight.
It may only happen a few times in your life.
Not once.
And you always remember it because it was there and you let it go and you think to yourself, what if I had stopped? No bills off the bottom of the drawer, please. It's your first time being around. You're doing great. Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
Come on.
think you flooded it. Get out of the car, sir.
Well, you're the reason, my friend, that I don't keep all my money in the bank.
Be surprised with all you can get and ask for it the right way.
Two men by the fence!
It's okay, we're the good guys.
What are you doing here?
You're just a girl. What do you do for a living? You pack a shotgun.
I'm a federal marshal and you're under arrest.
I'm in. Let's go. Hey, you comfy?
You have got to be kidding.
Now you be a good girl. Now I'm gonna open up the trunk. Hey, hey, hey!
You wanna sit down and have cocktails with a woman who tried to shoot you?
It was an unusual experience.
Wow, you are mean!
Oh, what, one last score? You tired of some island, is that the idea?
Partial to mountains myself. If you like islands, we'll pick an island.
I'm not exactly a 9-to-5 type.
Who is?
Happy birthday.
God, it's beautiful. Thanks, Dad.
Hey, ma'am, let me help you with these.
Yeah, I didn't ask for your help, so don't expect a tip.
Oh, that's okay, ma'am. I'll just take your car.
I've vertically integrated myself. You know, now I'm into the occasional grand larceny, home invasion.
Huh. He waved at you?
Couldn't swear to it, but I'm pretty sure he did.
Did you wave back?
Jeez, they're shooting men!
Sit down, Dick. They're trying to open up the safe. Now you're made. You wear one of these?
I don't ski.
I'm a federal officer. I can handle myself. We wanted to tussle. We tussled.
Whoops.
Damn it, Jack. Put the gun down.
You wouldn't do that.
Oh, why not?
Because you're having too much fun. Smile is in the making.
Okay, I love that film, quite Fuck frankly. Yeah. I have a real soft spot for this film. It is too cool for school. It is actually, it was the beginning of Soderbergh cool. It was the beginning of what Ocean's 11 took to a new
And a
stream.
Lot of people forget that this film actually came out.
Yeah.
It just gets lost in the whole hoorah.
I actually remember when the film 12. First came out. One of the reviews when the film first came out was basically like, oh, there's just no chemistry between Clooney and Lopez. No, that's crap. I'm sorry. They have so much chemistry between them. And we also forget that, and this is one of the things that this film highlights, is that Jennifer Lopez actually used to be a good actress before she became a pop star, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was actually an actress before a singer. And she played, what's her name? The singer who got shot by her fan.
Yeah,
What's her name? Celine? Yes. Celine?
Actually, she was, I believe one of her first things was she was a backup dancer on In Living Color. Which she did before she was an actress.
So was Paula Abdul, wasn't she?
she was a choreographer for the LA Lakers. But you definitely had you could see she was one of those model actress, dancer, singer, whatever sort of characters. And I think this was probably, as far as mainstream cinema goes, it was like the double big breakout roles for both of them.
Around this time, she did this. She did the Oliver Stone film U-Turn. She did, we'll forgive her for Anaconda, you know.
Anaconda was awesome.
Which was just dreadful. but she did a whole bunch of films. And then she became a pop star. And all credibility to anything that she'd ever done in the past was lost. Because she was suddenly... And there are so many people who actually go, oh, she's a pop star turned actress. Well, actually, reverse order, you know? And it looks like she's trying to become more of an actress again now.
We call that the Diddy effect or the Jamie Foxx effect, which is where you really, really like somebody until they get big, and then they become a douchebag wearing sunglasses during the day, during nighttime, inside a studio with, you know, bling everywhere and talking about themselves.
That's like Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx is another one. There are so,
I love Jamie Foxx, and so I hate him since he got big.
Yeah, that's the thing. I used to like him a lot, and there's so many people do not realize, so many of the younger people do not realize that Jamie Foxx was a comedian.
He was stand-up. The guy is a talented singer. I mean, I've got about 4 stand-up sets.
Well, he sang all the Ray. He sang all the stuff in Ray.
Yeah.
You know, it was phenomenal.
And he's a good... And I'll stand by this. I always feel that talented comedians usually tend... And I mean, like... You know, deep comedians, not like fucking Jimmy Fallon or, you know, something like that. I'm looking at the camera.
Yeah, no, we're talking about your Steve Martins, your Billy Crystals, even to many degrees, Robin Williams.
Jim Carrey,
to an extent, when he plays a serious role. Absolutely.
And they have this tortured, you know, it's like the sad comedian stereotype, which gives them so much depth when they act. And you totally get that with Jamie Foxx until... you know, he starts doing all these douchey bullshit. It's the same thing that happens
That happened with Don Cheadle in this film. What we were talking about during the trailer with playing, where he said he has disappeared up his own fundamental orifice. Now,
with the exception of Traitor, he was exceptional in Traitor.
He has become so up himself that he has lost sight of what used to make him great.
Mm.
This film was probably my... I haven't seen Traitor, but this film is probably my favorite Don Cheadle role.
Traitor will be after you.
Oh, okay, I'll have a look at it. Because he's funny. He doesn't take himself too seriously. You believe his character. He is a whack job in many ways. You know,
he's fucking out of there. I love the fact that the
Stop for 1 second here because we're going on about all this stuff. For those who haven't seen Out of Sight, the story is basically about a bank robber, George Clooney, who is considered like a gentleman bank robber. He never carries a gun.
Yeah.
He's smarter than everyone around him. And so he talks his way through
things. Well, the establishing scene in the movie is great because it basically gives you exactly what his character is. And he's like a used car salesman, you know. He's
snake
on his
oil
own.
Salesman.
He pretends that, you know, he's got a partner who's just some random guy who's talking to the manager and he's like, he's got a gun in his pocket, just give me the money, gets the money and walks out, and then, you know, obviously gets taken to prison.
And however, this is where the film takes a turn. We find out that he's actually done 3 stints in prison, so he's probably not quite as good as he thinks he is. And in where the film picks up, which is done in a lot of flashbacks, is he's breaking out of jail, and he takes as a captive a federal marshal, which is Jennifer Lopez.
That transition between like him coming out of the hole and her being taken captive is just such a like little tiny crafty scene. Like the fact that he kind of walks up and he's talking his way out of this. Like he's just came out of a hole, like covered in mud, and he's just like, "Yep, everything's fine.
I've already gone through the hole. I've looked through it all." And then just grabs her and throws her in the boot. And then of course, what we go on from there in this film is that this passion between these two people.
And it's a cat and mouse between cops and robbers. And to be honest, it had a real Hong Kong cinema feel to me as far as blurring the lines between right and wrong and you know, what is the right way, what technically is a bad person, what is technically a good person, and the things that happen throughout the course of the film.
Mm.
I mean, you've got powerhouse performances by everybody involved. Steve Zahn is the wacky sidekick.
He is brilliant.
I mean, there's a ton of... You got
hey,
Sam
man,
Jackson, there's a
long
cameo
time
at the end.
No see, man. I've been in jail. Oh, yeah.
I love that character that you always see Steve Zahn playing, and I adored, like... That film there is like that's traditional him, and it's really weird.
Well,
like,
quite frankly, he is the best thing in the Eddie Murphy film, Daddy Daycare. He is so funny in that film that it makes watching that film bearable because he's a nut job in it.
Look, I mean, as much as people rag on this film, I also love him in Sahara. Like,
yes,
he makes up for just the douchiness.
Well, I have to be on record.
I'm showing my wash.
I actually have to be on record.
But,
that's
what I kind of like, because if you've ever read the novels, Dirk Pitt is such a wanker.
I have
like,
to go on record
such...
and say that I actually quite like
Sahara.
For once, I am casting dispersion on a action
I thought it was a complete,
to everybody.
I thought it was a complete piece of nonsense, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, I mean, I
better
actually...
than National Treasure, which came out the same year.
What are you talking about? It's the greatest movie of all time. It's got a sequel. I don't see Sahara 2 being made. Do you?
Like, I mean, I have to say that as stupid as that film was, Steve Zahn really made it for me, just because he's playing that same guy, but just slightly more beefy.
Yeah, and if you've ever seen the film, the other film is, what's it called? Happy Texas? Lucky Texas? Happy Texas.
Happy Texas.
He's a nutjob in that, too, and I quite loved him in that.
He's just
well.
A nutjob.
He is. He's out of his tree.
It's the crazy eyes,
and
man.
This is one of the things I talked about on this show many, many weeks ago when I went to see Sunshine Cleaning. Is that Steve Zahn plays the cop that she's having an affair with, and he doesn't play wacky. He plays kind of like he's the ex-school jock, and he's put on a lot of bulk, and he's very serious, and it didn't work.
Mm.
Because that's not what Steve Zahn plays, you know? And he was the only character in Sunshine Cleaning that I did not believe at all, because I'm looking at him going... What are you doing to yourself? You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so I think the general consensus is that we adore Out of Sight. I know Josh has only saw it for the first time last night.
I've actually seen parts of it before. Like, I have actually seen the final scene of the movie, and I have also seen the boot scene where when they stop And this is a boot scene with the guns. That bit there, I actually really love that. That's like that always.
You're putting
makes
holes
me
in your car.
I love the way he's explaining it to her. It's like, we're not in front of you right now. You're just putting holes in your car.
I mean, you got the thing that made this film so great, besides the really understated performances by both of the leads, which I really enjoyed, and the pacing and the music was fantastic throughout the entire thing. But it's the entire supporting cast. I mean, Ving Rhames is brilliant as, you know, his usual Ving Rhames self. But
and this all once again, this is Ving Rhames. This is vintage, classic Ving Rhames.
But we talked about it while the trailer was on. My favorite is still Dennis Farina as J-Lo's old man, who, as awesome as it is, he was a real-life cop, which I only found out very recently. And he's just always such a smart, gruff, you know, he's just a prick all the time. But I love, you know, he's that lovable rogue. You love to hate him and hate to love him.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, okay, so for all those who are listening, if you have not seen Out of Sight, if you've been put off by the fact that J-Lo's in it or you're not a fan of George, forget all of that and go out.
The whole thing is it's before that period of time. Absolutely. And I think that's what people have to realize. You're not going to get
J-Lo, quite frankly, or Jennifer Lopez as she was back then, has never looked more stunning.
Oh, man.
She is gorgeous.
Like, I hate... I'm actually
smoking
not a huge Jennifer Lopez fan. Like, I mean, okay, aside from her... You
what
know,
are you talking about? Made in Manhattan was, like, top five.
Look, I'm not even talking movie-wise. I'm doing just, like, body-wise. Like, I mean, she's hot, but she's not, like, my A-grade. She's not where she fits, but... In this movie, she is just... She smolders the entire time she's on
screen.
Absolutely.
She's completely...
It's all about her butt.
I think it was actually shortly after this when she insured her butt and legs for $1 million. So,
Which I would like to break it and see what the insurance is.
I'd like to know how you're... Anyway, that's a whole different story. Anyway, why are we talking about Soderbergh and why are we talking about Out of Sight? Because this is all leading up to our feature review this week, which we're going to get onto right now because we're already an hour 20 minutes in.
Josh and I
went to see... The Informant last night, which is Steven Soderbergh's latest film, based kind of on a true story. It's based on a true story, but they dramatized a lot of factors involved in it, which is why the title has been changed. Instead of just being The Informant, it's The Informant with an exclamation mark after it.
That mean like you shout it when you get a ticket? Can I have one to The Informant?
And what you actually have is in the opening blurb, it actually says... Based on an actual event, some people have been changed, some descriptions have been changed, blah, blah, and it says, so there. Right? And then it goes on from there. And this is the story of a guy who works for a large company that produces lysine and corn-based products, corn syrup and so forth. And he tends to, it would seem as the film goes on, create stories around himself. And he kind of builds to this... this thing where he's getting involved with the FBI, basically about price fixing and so forth. Now, it is a very intriguing little film, and it falls into one of the three categories of Soderbergh films. Three categories of Soderbergh films are experimental little indie films, a la
Shit,
Bubble, Girlfriend Experience, and so forth. Shit. Then he has his big blockbuster summer films, which are Ocean's 11, Out of Sight, 12, 13, you know...
Could be shit.
Could be shit.
Could be shit.
The point is that all, I think, without exception, all of his big summer blockbuster films have turned hundreds of millions of dollars, which allow him to go off and make the third category of film, which is, I think, where Soderbergh is best placed.
Not shit.
Which is his odd little films that are accessible to the general public, but offer a little bit more in the brain power area. But we're talking about films like Aaron Brockovich and now The Informant, where...
I have to admit, that's the only Julia Roberts film I've managed to watch without throwing up.
I think Aaron Brockovich is a masterpiece. I think it's fabulous.
I can't. I just can't stomach watching anything with Julia Roberts.
Fair enough. Let's have a look at the trailer for The Informant. The Informant actually is, it's being really heavily marketed, by the way, on the fact that Matt Damon put on 30 pounds for the role.
And women everywhere cried themselves
to sleep.
And
apparently he has already lost it all. He went straight onto a diet afterwards and pulled it all off. But you got to give him that. It's the Nero school of acting. It's that, let's put on some bulk for the role. And I tell you, I admire him for that because it works better with him looking a bit heavy and chunky. So, anyway, here's the trailer for The Informant.
What I'm about to tell you, it involves something very large. Everyone in this country is a victim of corporate crime by the time they finish breakfast.
Yes.
Things are going on I don't approve of. I mean, I feel real bad about that.
Corn goes in one end and profit comes out the other.
Weird, right?
It's not just lysine, it's citric, it's gluconate. There was a guy who left the company because he wouldn't do it. He was forced out. The gluconate guy, he's out of a job.
Would you be willing to wear a wire? We need your help.
7:30 a.m. I am approaching the entrance to the office.
Good morning, Liz Taylor, secretary.
You don't really need to narrate the tapes for us when you're
absolutely
making them.
Just not a problem.
Once it starts, it is going to be intense.
What is he doing?
I told him the camera was in the lamp.
No. No.
How about this guy, Whitaker?
The guy's making 350 grand a year, and he turns informer. When does that happen?
Mark Whitaker, secret agent 0014.
Why 0014?
Because I'm twice as smart as 007.
Oh, no.
They will make me the next president of ADM.
How can you possibly stay there when you've just taken down the company?
Because they need me to run the company.
That's completely illogical.
Mark showed you that four white guys in suits getting together in the middle of the day. That's not a business meeting, it's a crime scene.
There's something you're not telling us.
Why would I hide anything from you guys?
We're going to find out what's going on, Mark.
FBI. What the heck is going on here?
Mr. Whitaker, would you please come with me?
Oh, yeah, I was good, right? Didn't I seem really scared?
Yeah, listen,
I actually felt scared.
I want you to keep this secret.
Absolutely.
Don't tell us anything.
It's very important to your case you not discuss this with anyone else.
I'm a person of interest in an ongoing investigation.
Oh, my God.
You guys still think I'm going to be okay at the company, right? I mean, you guys are going to take down the bad guys, but I'll be okay, right?
I think the corporate culture is going to change a little bit for you.
I should say so.
Listen, I haven't been telling you guys the whole truth, but I'm going to clear that up in there today.
What?
Okay, we gotta get you out of here.
All right, so that's The Informant, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Josh, what did you think?
Look, I'd start out by saying that any of Soderbergh's films that he does, I always take two ways. Like, I love the storytelling style. They always seem a little empty to me. I don't know why. I wouldn't put him in my top directors kind of a category, if you know what I mean.
I agree. I find he's a mixed bag.
Yeah, like, I mean, probably still one of my favorite films that he's ever done was the Ocean's 11, which I thought was one of the best remakes I had seen in years.
Yeah.
Like, the first one, it just oozes cool the entire time you're watching it. And it was such a, like, it really was probably the highlight for me of his career. I mean, I have liked a few along the way, Six Lies and Videotape and so on and so forth. I mean, they're interesting films, and this is the same sort of thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure when I walked out, the thing I turned around to Dave and said was, what an odd little film.
Yeah. Like, and I tend to say that a lot about Soderbergh, and that's the thing. You sit there and go, okay, what did I just watch?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's he really, like, to me, the movie started to slow down a lot in the second half.
Yeah.
And I think that was where I really
sorry, guys,
started to, I wouldn't say lose me, that would be a bit too much, but it just started to become this entire different film. It was like two different films in one film. Like, the first half is this very lighthearted, you know, sort of look at something that is incredibly serious. Like, I mean, the levels of stuff they
talk
about.
And you're not quite sure all the way through that first half whether he's making it up, whether he is, you know.
It's great, just like the way that it pans out. And I think that part of the film was, the entire time I was really enjoying myself. Like, I love the fact that If you're quick enough and focusing enough, you can realize that the entire time this guy is talking, like, he drives home in like one of like six different cars, and we're talking Ferraris, Porsches, like, and you're just sitting there going, hang on, what?
It comes out later he has eight cars in his garage, three of which he's never driven.
Exactly, and like, it's that sort of stuff starts to slowly pick away as you get through the film, and I really enjoyed that bit, and I enjoyed the fact that it was this, you know, like, the entire time, you know that he is lying through his teeth the entire way he talks, and like, he'll get to a bit and he'll be like, no. And I just love that line, the reoccurring line where it's like, is there anything else you have to tell us? And he'd be like, no, why would there be?
Not that I can think
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. and just like the entire time, there's just more and more stuff. And I mean, I think the second half, I can see what the point was. You know, like it's wrapping up the story, it's explaining. But I think it pulls in so serious. Like the reins get pulled so hard about that three-quarter mark when everything goes down that you really kind of start sitting there and going, yeah, okay, all right, whatever, let's finish this. It's lost its intrigue at that stage, and you'll notice, like, I mean, one of the main things I brought up that I loved about the movie was its score. I think that it's just got this awesome, like, I mean, in the same way that, like,
well, Marvin Hamlisch is a jazz musician who was doing a lot of scores actually in the 70s for a lot of the 70s films, mm-hmm. like 3 Days of the Condor and so forth, and he really, his kind of scores kind of went out of vogue. I think the last thing of note that he really scored was probably The Firm with Tom Cruise, and to bring him back, and not just bring him back, but to get him to do an absolutely 70s style, frivolous, fun little score on top of what is essentially quite a serious story.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting maneuver.
Look, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the way it played out. It really sort of it tied together that ridiculous nature and like a giant romp. I mean, the line that I really love is when he's in the courtroom at the end of the movie and he's just like, "Wow, what a ride!" And you're just sitting there going, "It really was." Like, I mean, the entire time you're going through, it's completely unbelievable that just all these people are completely unaware of the level of crap that he's been pulling the entire way through this film. And I love that bit about it. And I'm like, okay, I've rethought about it. I mean, I was a little harsh towards Matt Damon last night. Look, Matt Damon was really aptly played this character. And he's really difficult to take in this movie because you're not sure. Like, the entire time you look at his face, he's got such a nice, believable kind of a face that the entire time you look at him, you're just like, wow.
I was saying to Dave, actually, before we started, I really love the way the script is put together in this film. Because for the film you haven't seen. Because if you, when you actually first start watching the film, it's voiced over by Matt Damon. So he's got this voiceover that runs through. And the voiceover actually doesn't generally correspond with what's going on on screen.
I love that.
And it's fabulous. And so they'll be in this meeting, and the voices all kind of fade out of the meeting. You still see them talking. And he'll go on talking about bread or the toast that he had this morning.
Or the car or why he likes particular things so much. And it really kind of...
It really does play on the idea that, as we discover throughout the film, I don't think it's much in the way of spoilers because it's a true story, that he was an undiagnosed bipolar person who was basically... I think the voiceover really captures the fact that he really wasn't there half the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, I mean, it's hard to blame him due to the nature of the situation. But, you know, like, I mean, it all comes to a head at the end of the movie. I would say... It's very well put together. I mean, it has a couple of things that annoy me about Soderbergh films with just like these annoying cuts and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And
I was going to bring up about Out of Sight as well with his use of freeze frames.
Freeze frames, man. That's the only thing that really annoys me about that film.
He doesn't do the freeze frames in The Informant. The freeze frames really kind of annoy me. And he doesn't do the freeze frames in The Informant, but he does these odd cuts.
I've been freeze framed for like the last 10 minutes. Dave,
for those who are watching the video, Dave's moved his mic away because he actually hasn't seen The Informant, so he's sitting out and talking to the chat room by the looks of it or something. But
and by chat room, you mean Facebook.
Oh, there you go. Or Facebook.
I'm back, people.
He's back. All right, so I think it's an intriguing little film. Mm. And I think if you are in the mood for that kind of film...
Well, it's really strange because, I mean, like you're saying, he has a lot of experimental movies and so on and so forth, and this definitely doesn't fit in that class. Like, when he does those movies, it's very hit and miss. Mm. And unfortunately, I'm not calling this a miss, but it's a very mid-ground movie. Like, I didn't walk out going, wow, that was really cool, or I really enjoyed that. It was like, meh. Like,
yeah, it doesn't have the same impact as an Ocean's 11 or an Out of Sight.
Well, like, even some of his art house ones. Like, have you seen Lars and the Real Girl?
No, I haven't.
Okay, like, I mean, that's...
Now, he didn't direct that, though.
Are you sure? Because in the chat room was just...
Yeah, he put it in just to take the piss out of you. I thought you caught that.
What?
Whoever was in the chat room put that in was taking the piss out of you, because we were talking about girlfriend experience and rubber women, and Lars and the Real Girl is about a guy who falls in love with a real doll.
Oh, okay. I totally
look at that. Not even focused, half drunk.
Wow, you're doing well there, Dave. I think we should get you...
No, that's because he's focused on the chat room.
That's right. He didn't actually direct Lars in the room.
No, it seemed a little out of character for him. But that's the kind of thing. I mean, like,
I'm looking over his filmography right now, and you look at it and go, the little films that we talk. I mean, this is the man who brought us Traffic with Benicio del Toro and Michael Douglas.
Which is fantastic.
Which is fantastic. The British version arguably is better, but the American version was also fabulous. I mean, they're very different.
Yeah, no, that's what I'd say. They're very different. It stands alone kind of in my eyes.
Out of those little weird films that we were talking about, he did Full Frontal, which was one of the first ones.
Never saw that one.
Bubble.
Never saw that.
The Girlfriend Experience, and I believe he's got a couple new ones coming out. And also, many people actually consider Shay, parts 1 and 2. Oh, the phone is ringing.
What? Bit of professionalism.
This is the studio phone. There's actually no way to mute this, unfortunately. It'll be answered downstairs.
That's I bet all. You wish that it was the same for me. There was a way to mute this.
I could just kill your mic.
Would learn to sign.
Anyway, and Shay, for all intents and purposes, is one of those little art house films, albeit on a grander scale and split over two films and so forth. But really, it only got this little art house release and blah, blah, blah. I actually have a copy of Shay, which is on my to-watch pile, and it's one of those films that I just have had so much trouble to bring myself to watch.
Dude, it's like when I tried to watch Malcolm X. Like, it took me about 7 to 8 weeks before I could actually stomach
it. And funny thing is, once I watched, because I was the same, I put off Malcolm X and put off. Once I sat down to watch it, I was glued to it and thought it was fabulous. And, you know,
really?
It just took. Yeah, I love Malcolm X.
I'm sorry, because this is the only thing I actually can pipe out, because I know I had a huge fascination with black culture when I was about 17, and I ended up reading a ton of biographies on it. And I liked Malcolm X for what Denzel brought to the role, but if you've ever read his biography and everything, Spike Lee just smoothed over all the criminal elements.
And of course, the
part that made Malcolm X such a great read, even though it was real, was the fact that he was such a badass. And it wasn't just he was a thief; he stabbed people.
I think I should actually qualify that and say that I actually don't think that it's a very good biography.
No.
I think it's a very good film.
It's a good film, but
Denzel, who is another person who I think has slipped up his own fundamental orifice, and I'm not a huge fan of at the moment. But I thought his portrayal of Malcolm X
was inspired.
Was phenomenal. And I sat there glued to the screen watching that. And I'm sure that when I finally get around to watching Shay, part 1 and 2, one of the reasons I want to see it is Benicio del Toro. I'm a huge fan.
And also, like, we've both heard that the movie is fantastically shot.
He shot it on the Red 4K cameras.
This is the one where Benicio is like a revolutionary. Yeah, Shay turns into a werewolf.
Speaking of werewolves, completely off.
I've got tickets for that too.
Completely off on a tangent.
Wolfman.
It was announced, Wolfman, they're going with the R rating. They're not pushing it down to a PG-13.
Oh, thank God.
So it's like, yes! So we're going to get a grown-up film at least. So
I'm
nice.
Looking forward to Benicio just coming out going, I'm Wolfman. It's going to be awesome.
Anyway.
And then he starts dunking basketballs and riding on the roof.
Can we get back to the informant now? Thank you. focus, Dave. All right. As we said before, I think I actually walked out. Last night, you were a little bit hard. You backtracked out a little bit now. I actually thought Matt Damon did a really, really good job. I think, quite frankly, the film really hinged on Matt Damon's performance. And if you took Matt Damon out of the film, you could have made The Informant with another actor, but it would have been a very different film. Mm-hmm. And I think that what Matt Damon brought to the table, I think he captured that, as you said, that duality of the role, that concept that he's got that, you know, face where it looks like butter won't melt in his mouth.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Innocent, pure, but he's so devious in the background.
I think it's not even it's not even a form of deviancy. I think
I'm back.
It's not even to that extent. I think that it's just he was A, so detached, and B, he was just, all he was trying to do was clean himself up. You notice that every time he talks, all he's doing in his mind is justifying what he does. He's just like, I'm a good guy, I do this, I do that. And I love that speech where they ask him what he's in this for, and he comes up with that ridiculous story that has nothing to do with subject
reality.
They're talking about. He's just like, you know, I did this, and I did that, and, you know, like, this is my reasons. And you just see the two guys kind of like pause for a minute and then go, okay. Right. All right. Well,
and now speaking of those two guys, Joel McHale and Scott Bakula as the two FBI agents.
That would have been awesome.
I love the fact that they have this hangdog look on their face throughout the entire thing, because it's like, really, did he lie again? You know, and it's like all the way through. It's like, Is there anything else you want to tell us?
I love that bit right at the end where they're just about to, where the other agent, not Scott, but
John McHale,
John McHale, comes in to see him for his last time, and they have that conversation. He's like, "So such and such didn't come." He's like, "Yeah, he's still pretty mad at you," and like you're just like, and he's just like, "Oh, well, that's sad. Let him know that I like." And it's that horrible love to hateness about him. And it's just, I love the fact that in the end you find out that the guy's now working as a fucking representative
He's a CLO of a company.
I'm just sitting there going, "Who gave this guy rights to keep working?"
He still hasn't got his pardon, but he's now the chairman of operations of a company. It's like, he's got a criminal record. He was in jail for, 4 years? It's like 5 years? Who hires this person?
Yeah.
Anyway, the informant. Look, the more I actually talk about The Informant, the more I actually enjoyed it. So I have to say, I will actually watch it again when it comes out on DVD. it is worth having a look at. I don't think it is Steven Soderbergh's best film. No. It is by far not his worst film.
No.
And I think it is actually quite entertaining. Now, two things I'd like to just point out. One is Anne Cusack is in this film.
We both thought this was really
cool. We saw her name in the credit movie. We said, "Is there another one?"
Had to find out.
And
man,
then as soon as she appears and starts talking, we went, "She's a Cusack." And she's,
you can't ever confuse that. No, with
she's a younger sister to Joan. And apparently there's two more who are also on IMDb. So
I want to see
the whole Cusack family is coming.
With all the Wayanses and all of the Cusacks is together.
Can we have the bad guys in that movie being all of the Baldwins?
Oh,
Adam's
not a Baldwin.
I don't care. His name's Baldwin, and he'd make a cool bad guy.
He's a Baldwin.
He's related.
He's more of a Baldwin than Steven is.
Have you guys ever seen a film directed by Walter Hill called The Long Riders? It's a Western about Jesse James.
And
talk about inspired casting. What you're talking about right now, he cast as the James brothers, the two Keach brothers. He cast as the Youngers. He cast all the Carradine boys. And he cast as two of the other brothers, the two Quaids. He cast
Randy.
All the brothers, real brothers, as brothers.
But he had Randy.
Genius. Randy and Dennis as the two brothers.
God.
And Randy was actually good. So this is back in back in the 70s. And well worth having a look at it. And if you want to talk about a brutal Western, this is a brutal Western. It is
brothers in one freaking movie.
And Walter Hill, the man who directed the first episode of Deadwood, and also directed Red Dawn. Wolverines! Anyway. Sorry, that was John Milius. I take that back. John Milius directed Red Dawn, the right-wing whack job that he is. All right, so that's The Informant. I think we've just read this pony to death, don't you think? I would say go see it. My opinion is go see it. Dave, you're going to go see it, I hope.
My opinion is totally go and see it. It's awesome. It's like the best Soderbergh film since the last one.
One last thing I want to point out in The Informant before we sign out of here and get out of here for the day is that Melanie Lynskey. Melanie Lynskey, I saw her name in the credits. I didn't know she was in this, and I went, "Oh, cool. I like Melanie Lynskey." And I know you guys are not fans of the show, and I don't care if you are or not. She is quite good. She plays the stalker in 2.5 Men.
Admittedly, even though I hate that show so very, very much, I do actually think she's really funny.
She's really funny, and the most amazing thing about her is she does this absolutely impeccable American accent. In fact, my mother, who is a dialect coach, actually thinks she is superb, did not know she was actually from another country, and she's actually has in her natural accent this incredibly thick Kiwi accent. And she's been over in America for years, and she is really, really charming as Matt Damon's wife. Putting up this at one scene where he's telling another story, and she just goes, just stop. Please, just stop. I just love her. And I love the fact she talks with that slightly Cupid doll voice that's slightly ethereal to her. I think she's wonderful. And she's also well worth having a look in this film as well.
Yeah.
So it has a great supporting cast. Soderbergh has always been fabulous at casting his films. All of his films have great supporting casts, including Out of Sight. And this is no exception. He's cast these wonderful, weird people in these support roles. And let's not forget, one of the highlights of this film for me is where he's making the tapes. And he's narrating them as he's doing them. Which I just think is bad. Where he walks in the room and he walks in and says, He puts the recording device on, walks in the room, and it's like, yes, I'm here, and this is Joe Smith.
I just love the car to the actual front door where he's just like, out of the car. Moving towards the building. And what does he say? He's like, building breached. And you're just like, what?
I thought it was fabulous.
He's 0014.
Because he's twice as good as 007. All right, we've killed this one, I think. All right, so we're going to get ourselves out of here. If you agree or disagree with any of our takes on today's show, you can send feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. Make sure you do catch up with Platforms, our chart-busting gaming podcast. Thanks, boys. I'll just put a camera on. There you go. He won't be satisfied until I put a camera on him. All right. So now, for a little bit of housekeeping today, we'll say make sure you do catch up with the podcast Real Junkies and Movie Fan House, and also our good friend Ben over at Ben's Tech Show. I think he deserves a bit of a plug as well. If you have missed the video of this show and you would like to
Shame on you.
And you would like to see the video, you can always catch the replay all week at geekactually.com/live. If we wanted to find out a little bit more about you, Josh, where would people look for you on the internet?
Well, obviously you can come visit the Platforms or Geek Actually fan pages. Yep. We're members of both of those.
Sorry, platforms.
Platforms.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to get old.
No, we're going to keep doing that. I think we're going to keep it just so that it's running gag in like 15 shows from now.
Like you've never been drunk before and done something stupid.
Yeah, I try to tend to stay away from things like this. You know, important, you know, life-crushing decisions. But you can see us at either of those. Or facebook.com/geekjosh. That's me. Please friend me at the moment. We're trying to get as many people on these fan pages as we can, because these help out. These are like the equivalent of the Twitter. When we go out, we'll drop notes and this, and
remember,
that'll show up.
You don't need to wait for approval or anything. Fan pages, you just say join as a fan and you're
a
fan.
It's really hard because there's a link and you click the link. It just says a big button. Become a fan at the top. And you go, click. And it's done, and then, you know, we make a Brazilian dollars, and we make a good show.
Yeah, I wish we made a Brazilian dollars.
I wish we made any dollars.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
That would be a nice change of
pace. Did I tell you, by the way, we have a donations button on the website? Yeah.
Please donate. I know it doesn't look like it, but some of us are wasting away from not eating for the last month, and it would be nice.
Really? Wasting away?
Yeah, look at it. I'm nothing. I'm down to a B cup. Cool.
All right, so Dave Kozicki, if you wanted to find out more about you on the internet, where would people go? Dave?
Sorry. You can find Dave at Platforms Live.
Platforms Live, yes.
You can friend me on Facebook, Dave.Kozicki. You know, the whole crap beforehand. I can't be bothered going through
it. If you're
a Twitter user, you can find me on twitter.com/DaveKozicki, no breaks. And you can subscribe to my blog, which is a hyphen in between each one, feeltheawesome@blogspot.com.
Feel the awesome.
And that's where I put up about 30 articles by now, because I was busy being drunk and misspelling things.
Now, Dave has actually just given me his paragraph. Josh is still going to give me his. There will be an about page on Geek Actually in the next week.
Yeah. Can I read it? Should I read it now? Because it's awesome. Okay, maybe not.
No. Let's surprise people. But that will all, the about page will also contain all of our links to all of our other stuff.
Awesome.
So when that goes up, you'll be able to easily find us all from there. Sorry, Josh, I think I got you in mid-sentence. Where can people find you?
Giving reach arounds at the wall.
No, we switched over to Dave. I'm well done, man. I'm in the next.
Oh, that's right. Dave, we're on you. Feeltheawesome.com. You can follow your Twitter and everybody. Good. We're
follow
all done.
My Twitter or my adventures on Facebook if you friend me. And they are wonderful, glorious adventures.
There, and you'll find out how drunk he's going to be for the next show.
Oh, dude. I have no shame in posting mutilated, drunken photographs of myself. I have been told to stop doing that.
You can find out more about me at twitter.com/DavidMcVeigh. You can friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/DavidMcVeigh. You can become a fan of Geek Actually at facebook.com/GeekActually. And, of course, you can send feedback to feedback@GeekActually.com. Now, we also have, and I don't have, once again, how professional am I? I don't have the number in front of me again.
What, almost as professional as me?
Almost as professional as you, but the number...
I think this is like the Hangover Show Part 2.
It is. It's really, it's out
it's
there.
Christmas.
What did you say when we were describing Joss Whedon? What were the two words you... Unfinished Symphony?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we should call the show today. This week's show is the Unfinished Symphony.
All right, Christmas is too close and stuff is getting too complicated.
End of the year is getting too close. We all need a holiday. All right, so the other thing I was about to say is that we have a voicemail line that if you want to send a voicemail to us, you can. The voicemail number is on the website at geekactually.com, right there on the page. /live or /platforms. Just make sure you mention which show the voicemail is for at the beginning of the message.
We only take heavy breathers and perverts. We don't want any of the put the lotion in the basket shit left on
and
the
if
voicemail.
You, and if you are a Skype user and you are international, the voicemail also works just for Skype. All you have to do is go forward. It's just make us a contact, Geek Actually. And you can Skype your voicemail in. In the meantime, guys, we're going to get out of here because these guys are losing focus really fast.
We have no focus to speak of.
Go see more movies you don't see.
Oh my God, that dog has a puffy tail.
Right,
madness.
Movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will see you all more next week. Say bye, boys.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, I'm now joined by the little geek, Nicholas McVeigh. How are you, Nicky?
Hello.
Nicholas wanted to join us last week when we did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, but unfortunately...
I haven't seen it.
We had that discussion last week where we said that... the Ritz was not playing kids' films in the sessions where kids could actually see them because they were all at school and we couldn't get him in. But anyway, he's now seen it.
Yay!
And we thought we'd just get his opinion because, once again, we'd like to get the opinion of Nicholas during the kids' films.
And also it's holidays.
And it's holidays now. Yes, you started holidays yesterday and you're taking a trip to Melbourne.
Yeah.
So that's all very exciting. So tell us, what did you think of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs?
I loved it.
You loved it?
Yeah.
Who was your favorite? I know who my favorite character was, and I actually mentioned it on the show, and I think we're probably in agreement. Who was your favorite character during
the
film? Steve.
Hungry.
Gummy bears. So, yeah, I mean, we're not going to go into the whole plot and everything of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, because we actually did our full review last week, but I just thought it's always good to get you in, because sometimes we overlook things that the kids might have actually thought were more appealing than the adults would have thought, although I think we pretty much universally love this film. So, your general feelings on it?
I like the 3D.
You like the 3D? Oh, the 3D was very awesome.
Yeah. And, I don't know.
You don't know. You just liked it, did you?
Yeah. Sorry, I haven't seen this in last... I didn't...
That's right. You saw it a week ago now, yeah. So it's not quite fresh in your mind. Did you... How would you rate this up, say, next to... You know, because we always try and compare our CG films. So we're comparing this up next to, say, one of the DreamWorks films, like Kung Fu Panda or Shrek. Where does this rate up there? I'm not going to put Pixar in there, because Pixar always just overrates everything. But,
What do you mean overrated?
Well, like, you know, quality-wise, what did you do? How do you think it rates up there with the rest of the CG films that are?
I like it better than Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I really enjoyed Kung Fu Panda. Yeah, and I think you really enjoyed Kung Fu Panda at the time as well. So it rates higher. Was it a surprise for you, this movie? Because I know when I saw the trailer, I didn't think I really wanted to see it very much. I didn't think.
Well, I thought I wanted to see it because it looked funny, like pizza chasing a ship.
Yeah, the pizza chasing the self-aware food was kind of fun. So you saw the trailer and actually did want to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was a bit shaky on it, because I thought the premise of the movie, the concept of the movie looked a little bit silly. And I thought, I don't know if I want to see that. But then I quite enjoyed the film in the end. Actually, I've seen it twice now. I actually really, really enjoyed it.
Mamma mia!
What did you think? I love his. I love the characteristic of him where he narrated everything he was doing, pushing buttons.
Yeah. preparing coffee break.
Yes, I thought he was very funny. And, of course, Steve the monkey was a joy. I loved him. I also really liked the guy who used to be the baby.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. I thought he was very funny.
I also like the mayor. He just got so fat. That didn't go planned.
That didn't go as planned. That wasn't a very well thought out plan. Yes. All right. So I think if you were to say to your fellow 10-year-olds out there, and you were going to say what to them?
Go watch it.
Go watch it? Please. Could you do? So let's say they can't get to a 3D session. Do you think it's going to lose anything in non-3D?
Not really. I actually like the film. It was funny.
It was funny. So it's not just relying on the 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is a more enjoyable experience with the 3D, though.
Yeah, it's not like Journey in the Center of the Earth and they just want 3D.
Which, if without the 3D, there's not much of a film, is there? Yeah. So no, I agree with you. I think the film holds up as its own, and I think when it comes out on DVD, it's also going to be just as fun. Because although the 3D was spectacular. Now, speaking of that, we rewatched the other day because we ordered a copy from Amazon and we got Coraline.
Yeah.
Which we both loved, Coraline.
Yeah.
Now, you've seen it now in 2D on the DVD. Does it still hold up even without the 3D experience?
Yes.
Yeah? So you still like it as much as you did when you saw it at the cinema?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm actually reading the book at the moment. I got a comic book version.
A comic book version. Cool. I'll have to have a look at that. I'd like to actually read the, because it's based on a book by Neil Gaiman, I believe. I'd really like to read the Gaiman book. I think it'd be very interesting.
Yeah, because I'm not good at big books, so I got the comic book from the library.
Cool. And the last thing before we finish up for the day, now, you've been having, in school, the teacher has been reading The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yep. And that's coming out. There's
I was going to say, are you interested in the movie? Have you seen the trailer for it?
Yeah.
Does it interest? Because it's that old school stop motion animation style.
Yeah, like you see the
you can see the fur moving. And all that. Does it still interest you even though it's that old school stop motion?
Yeah.
Yeah? Cool. And the other thing we should announce to our listeners and hopefully our watchers is that you're actually working on a new animated film, a new animated Lego film, which is a Christmas film.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that he has it finished and we may show it on the Christmas show next week.
Yeah, because I'm not going to be here next week.
You're not going to be here. You're going to be in Melbourne, but hopefully we will have the film to show if you get it finished. If not, we will show it the following show when we come back on, which will be after Christmas, but that's okay. Hopefully.
It's called Santa Down.
Santa Down. All right. So hopefully we have that to look forward to next week. We will let our listeners or our viewers know more about that next week when we actually do the Christmas show.
Oh, yeah. And again, I like the bit in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs with everyone holding their plates out.
Yeah.
And then pasta just goes everywhere.
The huge mountain of pasta comes out. Yeah, that was very funny. I thought the CG was really good in that film. I thought it was really, really well done. I thought I liked the idea of the really cartoonified characters, but all the backgrounds and everything were really realistic. I thought that was really well done. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up for the day because I need to get this show up online. I want to say thank you for joining us. And you remember, for our listeners out there, if you want to find out a little bit more about Nicholas and the movies he makes, you can go to YouTube.
Yeah.
What's your channel called?
Nikki McVeigh.
Nikki McVeigh on YouTube. And you can watch his films that he produces and find out more about him. All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.